Thank you, Aaron, and good afternoon to you all. My talk today will be on the developing of the indicators for national IHR implementation, and will cover a background on the international health regulations, the core capacities that are defined in terms of strengthening for international health, and the indicators that are developed or have been developed. It's an ongoing work, but I'll present where we are with this development of the indicators to monitor the core capacity implementation and some of the challenges we have faced and the next steps. So why do we need global health security? Why are we concerned today? Why the IHRs? As you can see, several new emerging and threats have occurred over the last few years, and these are just more recent years, and they range from infectious diseases through to non-infectious disease origin. There are issues around multi-drug resistance, tuberculosis, the issues of zoonotic origin, such as the avian influenza that the H5N1 we've recently been through. There are issues that move beyond those to radionuclear events, such as the Chernobyl disaster, and even back to chemical events such as the pollution in Ivory Coast a couple of years back due to a chemical spill. So we are really concerned about national and global health threats and addressing these given the increase in globalization and the fact that we now live in a global village where an event that takes place in Asia or in Africa could be in the United States within 24 hours, given the increase in travel and improved technology. In addition, we are also concerned because of the threats of use of biological and chemical agents and other kinds of accidents that might occur and hamper our global and regional and national health security, and which would greatly impact on the health, the economy, and the security in countries. So the international health regulation is a global framework that has been in place for a while. It's nothing new. It's a legally binding global agreement where countries of the World Health Organization, 194 member states to date, have came together to agree on an international commitment for shared responsibility and collective defense against the spread of disease. And this is based on collective rules. Many people have heard about the 1951 sanitary regulations that were later changed into the 1969 international health regulations that had the compulsory notification of six diseases, but which was later revised in 1981 to take into account the eradication of smallpox. And later on, based on the emerging and re-emerging events as shown in the previous slide, a request was made from the WHO member states to revise these 1969 regulations, which were then revised into what we currently call the International Health Regulations 2005. So, what is the purpose of this? It is to prevent, protect against, control, and provide public health response to the international spread of disease. And unlike before, where there were blanket measures, now, this would be in ways that are commensurate and restricted with the public health risk. And all of this with the aims to avoid unnecessary international interference with international trade, traffic, and travel. So there is a complete paradigm shift here from controlling infections entering a country at the borders to moving to containment of these at source. And not only that, it has moved then from a disease list of three, which were cholera, yellow fever, and plague before, to all public health risks and threats that might be of international concern. And again, from these preset measures that that existed before, to measures that are adopted to the kinds of risks and threats that are identified. And within this framework, there is the building of national core capacities to be able to meet these requirements to which all member states have agreed. So what are these core capacities for surveillance and response we are talking about? In the international health regulations, this is part of what we call the Annex 1A. Although they are said to be regulations and are legally binding, they're just an opportunity for countries to do what they should be doing anyway in terms of strengthening their surveillance and response, and not only for infectious diseases, but going beyond those to other events. And so the regulations ask that at various levels of the within any member state, any country, at the local level, that's the community and peripheral levels, they should have the capacity to detect events, report, and put in place primary control measures. At the intermediary level, they should have the capacity, in addition, to confirm, assess, and report. And at the national level, this assessment and notification to WHO should be accompanied also with public health response that puts in place the appropriate control measures, that provides assistance, operational links to relevant technical and other partners, as well as has a public health emergency plan. And all of this should be mobilizable within 24 hours. What are the underlying principles of strengthening these core capacities for the IHRs? They have to reflect the new scope of the IHR, which moves from which moves beyond diseases to public health risks, which moves beyond biological agents to include chemical events and radionuclear events and food safety events, which also moves beyond the looking for known risks and specific risks to the unknown and the emerging risks. It also builds on the core principle of capacity building. Building on existing systems and resources, leveraging what a country has. Many countries are strapped for resources and have a lot that could be built upon, and it is not a vertical system. It builds on what is there and tries to build sustainable systems. And within the international context, there is the notion of going beyond the national borders. And while respecting a nation's sovereignty, there's the idea of sharing information and partnerships and supporting response to these threats through an international mechanism that supports risk assessment, surveillance, and response. So, what is the timeline to which all countries have signed up to, including the United States? That from the entry into force, these core capacities we have talked about, which cover the surveillance and response, but also cover the points of entry, which I'm not going to cover in this talk. By 2009, this should be the assessment should be completed, and the core capacities implemented by 2012. And where a country is unable to do this, it could be extended for another 2 years to 2014. And under exceptional circumstances, and with approval from the Director General of the World Health Organization, this could move on to 2006. And of course, this should be monitored. So, in order to meet this, the World Health Organization and partners are working on a number of tools that start with the recommended core capacities. The the guidance has given the broad lines of what we should be doing, but it doesn't really tell you what these capacities are. And after a lot of discussions, a document is going to be released that gives you the core capacities. How to assess these capacities through a checklist and an in-depth protocol that is being worked on, and how to measure the progress made in implementation, and that would be the indicators about which I'll go in a little bit more depth. So, indicators for monitoring. What was the need? The World Health Assembly, which is the body that governs our governing body, and which constitutes of all the 194 member states, have requested in this international health regulations that countries that we should measure the progress towards the implementation of these core capacities, and countries should be able to monitor that implementation as well as WHO. The Director General of the organization is therefore expected to report to the World Health Assembly, which takes place in May of every year, on the progress made in this implementation, highlighting the country's reports on progress and WHO's reports on progress towards that implementation. And these indicators, which we tried to develop, are the first, so far, the first attempt at global indicators for the IHR. So what was the process? We had several working groups within the World Health Organization and different levels that looked at what could be the core capacities from that a country would have to comply to. What is the minimum that any country across the world should have, whether it is the United States or Yemen or Afghanistan? In looking at that, came up with a document from which about 80 draft indicators were extracted. And in a technical consultation in Lyon in France in May, which brought together over 40 participants, technical experts from all the WHO regions and some member states and various institutions, including the US CDC, Japanese CDC, European CDC, African training networks, and a lot of other people. They came together and sat down for 3 days looking at these core capacities and looking at the various indicators that were proposed, and came up with a short list of indicators for review by partners and WHO. So what did they come up with? A matrix approach for the core capacities that identified 8 core capacities that each country would be expected to have in place, and 5 hazard areas or potential hazard areas which could be increased as the countries saw fit. They agreed on the objectives for the collection of these indicators, which would be to help countries monitor their IHR implementation, to provide WHO with the status of this implementation, and better target not only WHO support, but partner support to countries, and finally to enable the reporting to the World Health Assembly. As a first step, the group of experts decided to focus on the country-level indicators whilst keeping in mind that there were WHO-level indicators and the World Health Assembly indicators to develop. And they came up with 33 indicators. So what are these core capacities we're talking about? The 8 areas that were identified were those of legislation that would enable the implementation of the IHRs, the policy and coordination that would bring together all these various partners, including chemical, radionuclear, food safety, and other areas. The surveillance core capacities, and that is defined again, further defined and broken down. Capacities in terms of preparedness, response, risk communication, that covers not only the outbreak communication, but also communication for behavioral change and social mobilization. Laboratory capacities, as well as human resource capacities that are needed to make any system function. the areas, the potential hazards that these core capacities would cut across would be human health, zoonosis, food safety, chemical, radionuclear, and events that occur at points of entry, which could be airports, seaports, or ground crossings. And these capacities would need to be developed at the national level, the intermediate level, and the community level as defined within the IHRs. What would be the principles around this? These capacities are proposed to be, the indicators are proposed to be developed around the core capacities as defined in the previous slide, and based on minimum measures of compliance identified for these capacities. At the country level, the indicator should help identify changes that need to be made, provide information to guide program improvement, inform strategic and program planning, and help to establish a feedback mechanism for decision making. So what were the criteria for the selection of the indicators? The first was this, that it should be scientifically robust. And within that, there are a number of considerations and criteria that were considered. The reliability, which means that the indicator produces the same results when measured with exactly the same when measuring the same thing. Validity, that allows the indicator to measure exactly what it is intended to measure. The specificity, in terms of measuring only what it is supposed to measure. The sensitivity, in terms of reflecting changes in the phenomenon that is being measured. The relevance, in terms of the usefulness to the people who are going to use it, being measurable, quantifiable, and operational in the sense of reference standards that have been established. In addition, we considered issues around the availability of the information, the data that we wanted to collect, and the minimum data that would be needed. And that would include the affordability of the data collection process and the accessibility to information and the feasibility of obtaining that information at a minimum cost. Standardizing adaptable approaches, ensuring that the data collected is representative of the population we want to look at. Ethical issues around the rights of the individual to confidentiality and freedom of choice in supplying data and informed consent. And broad consensus by all the stakeholders who would implement these indicators. So the indicators were picked out based on this criteria, and progressive levels of capability was assigned to these indicators. And a color-coded system was proposed with four distinct levels of capability that went from 0 to 3, with the progression in each level for the indicators being a meaningful step towards achieving the final minimum capacity. And each of these levels had the flexibility of a grading within, and in the next slide I'll explain this a little bit more. So that is an example of one indicator for national legislation. And there, the indicator I want to see is that the national legislation is compliant, allows compliance with the IHR. And so the 0 to 3 system, scoring system, that has different categories of implementation, from ranging from no or limited review through to all revisions have been carried out and the system is fully compliant with the implementation of the IHRs. It's not meant for you to really read through, it's just to show you like the surveillance component that has got a number of sub areas within these that touch on the organization and structure of the surveillance. The need, because of the objective of the IHR to rapidly detect immediately notify and promptly respond that needs then to go beyond the routine surveillance systems in place and really build on the early warning components of the surveillance system. And because of the spread to all risk, you need to go beyond our traditional sources of information and start tapping into other sources of information that would provide information on radionuclear risks and chemical risks and other risks that might be out there. So the laboratory is another example that covers areas around the alert and response capacity, the inventory of laboratories and capabilities within the country would be a minimum measure, biosafety issues, quality assurance programs and issues. So an overall country view for a given year could be something like this. This is not real data. It's just we're just playing around to see what it could give. From a 0 to 3 score, you could have a country that has, you know, a 1 score, and here this is the possibility of grading within the scoring, where here you would have units of 10%. So you have maybe 30 to 50%, and a country can watch itself move across an orange line into a yellow line and eventually into the green line, which is the obtention of the full capabilities. And an overview, I'm sorry for the people who are colorblind here, somebody pointed out to me that this wouldn't go down too well with them because they wouldn't tell the difference, but it's very colorful. And at a glance, we're keeping in mind that the objective again is to help a country build its capacities. It can tell you at a glance where, based on your core capacity, there is a gap that needs to be addressed or further strengthened within that framework. So in terms of the data collection, analysis, and dissemination, the data would be collected through self-assessment checklists and in-depth questionnaires. There are other methods, country surveys, data collected through our various WHO regional strategies, like the Integrated Disease Surveillance Strategy in Africa, or the Emerging Infectious Disease Strategies in the Americas, or the Asian Pacific strategies for emerging diseases in the Western Pacific and the Southeast Asian regions of WHO. Analysis would be done both by countries and WHO countries to be able to support and improve and address the gaps, and WHO to support countries in achieving these core capacities. Dissemination of information will be in country by the countries, but also by WHO to partners and stakeholders so that they can better support countries. So these are the tools that we are currently developing, checklists for a self-assessment checklist for countries and in-depth questionnaires for countries that want to go further and really pinpoint very to the smallest level the problems that they have. So what are the issues and the challenges? We have had a lot of challenges in terms of actually identifying the best indicator. We have got all these myriads of indicators out there, and really picking what the variable that would measure most what you want to measure has been a challenge, especially given that there are so many good indicators one can pick from. Making the indicators applicable globally has been it's really been a challenge also, because we've got countries like Russia, we've got countries like China, we've got countries like India, we've got countries like Lesotho, which are just like a dot on the map. We've got countries like Somalia with no government. We've got countries where the myriad is just enormous, and we have to be able to come up with indicators that would be applicable globally in spite of these differences. The scoring, the grading has also been a problem, and also the possibility of weighting within the indicators. Do you give the same weight to having an event-based surveillance system as you'd have give to having a routine surveillance system? Or do you give the same weight to one component or in a composite indicator? These are all issues that we are still discussing and challenge and and challenged over. And most of the indicators that were picked out were process indicators, but we also need to start thinking about outcome indicators. And this is work in progress, but the meeting decided to focus mainly on the process indicators as a first step. In terms of the next steps, we intend to share the work we're doing, this current work, with a broader group of technical partners, agree on methods of data collection, identify countries in which to field test these indicators, finalize them, disseminate them, and continue advocating for the implementation of indicators at the country level. I'd like to acknowledge and thank our WHO member states, headquarter colleagues, regional offices, and our WHO partners. And here in CDC, the people who participated in this process are right there up front on the pictures. Helen Perry, Mike St. Louis, Jeffrey, Victoria, Robert Pina, Tad Wahib, and Scott McNabb. Thank you.